After the show on the cosmic spaceship, I'm also going to tell you all about it. Did you know the universe is a hologram? Yep, you heard it here. You're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic, the radio show version. I also have a book out called Don't Panic, It's Organic. I give online classes starting in, well, I started in 1970. It wasn't online then. It's called Don't Panic, It's Organic. And this is the home of the Invisible Gardener. That would be me. So visit Invisible Gardener, GARDENER.com today. Let the Invisible Gardener help you too. Remember, membership is still free. So now I'm going to give out the call numbers in case you want to call and talk to me. A few old-time members have been popping up. That always happens. You know, I've been doing this a long time. Membership is lifetime. And so they go away. I move. We do things, right? But we all get together sooner or later. So that's great that you're coming back. But you do have to re-sign up for the new website. It's a whole brand new thing. You don't have to pay for anything. Just re-register. You get... You can start getting my newsletter. You'll get you need to sign up for the podcast. If you're not getting the podcast, there's no reason for you not to get it. You can get it right here on bbsradio.com, or you can get it on invisiblegardener.com. You can get it from iTunes. Turns out you can get it from any number of places. Also, I'm up there on Spotify. You can get a subscription to my Don't Panic, It's Organic, as well as my Cosmic Spaceship shows. This song, Thank You, has over, last time I looked, it was 7,252 and a half hits. That's in about a week or so, week and a half, maybe 2 weeks. I'm having dreams of selling, I'm not going to sell it, I want to give it away, you know, giving away millions and millions of it. I'll explain to you how it's done. It's the dual hologram. Really, really cool. And it's even cooler when I can explain to you how it works, interacts with the outside of your body, right? So today's show is going to be called, it's going to be on the, I'm going to continue talking about the Great Collapse. It's called the Great Nutrient Collapse. And so I don't know if I explained it to you last show, what this Great Nutrient Collapse is about. So I'm going to cover it, go over it slightly with you now, so you'll know what I'll be talking about. So, the Great Nutrient Collapse, as a subtitle, is called The Atmosphere is Literally Changing the Food We Eat for the Worse, and nobody is paying attention. They don't know that I've been yelling about it for over 100 years or thousands of years. But it's about a mathematician. His name is Irakli. It's I-R-A-K-L-I. Irakli. Loladze. L-O-L-A-D-Z-E. And he started in Arizona State University. And he was studying zooplankton. Okay. So these are zooplankton, are microscopic animals that float in the world's oceans and lakes. Food, they rely on algae, which are essentially tiny plants. Scientists found that they could make algae grow faster by shining more light on them, increasing the food supply for the zooplankton, and which they should have flourished. But it didn't work out that way. When the researchers shined more light on the algae, the algae grew faster, and the tiny animals had lots and lots to eat. At a certain point, they started struggling to survive. This was a paradox. More and more food should lead to more growth, so how could algae be a problem? So, Lolades, that's his name, L-O-A-L-A-D-C, was technically in the math department, but he loved biology, so he couldn't stop thinking about it. Biologists had an idea what was going on. The increased light was making the algae grow faster, but they ended up containing fewer of the nutrients the zooplanktons needed to survive. By speeding up their growth, the researchers had essentially turned the algae into a junk food. Zooplankton had plenty to eat, but their food was less nutritious, and so they were starving. I'm no comment here about the human condition at the moment, but think about it. Lolazi used his math training to help measure and explain this algae zooplankton dynamic. He and his colleague devised a model that captured the relationship between a food source and a grazer that depended on the food. They published their first paper in 2000, but Lolazi was captivated by a much larger question raised by the experiment. How far this problem might extend. What struck me is that its application is wider. Lazi called it an interview. Same problem affects grass and cows. What about rice and people? It was kind of a watershed moment for me when I started thinking about human nutrition, he said. In the outside world, the problem isn't that plants are suddenly getting more light, that for years they've been getting more carbon dioxide. Plants rely on both light and carbon dioxide to grow. Shining more light results in faster growing. By the way, before I go any further, this is an article written by Helena Botmiller-Evich. Okay? I want to make sure she gets credit for it. The great nutrition collapse, I got it in Political. Okay, so it said, the plants rely on both light and carbon dioxide to grow. If shining more light results in faster growing, less nutritious algae, junk food, algae, ratio of sugar to nutrients was out of whack, then it seemed logical to assume that ramping up carbon dioxide might do the same. And it could also be playing out in plants all over the planet. What might that mean for the plants that people eat? What Lolazi found is that scientists simply didn't know. It was already well documented CO2 levels rising in the atmosphere. At how little research had been done on how it affected the quality of the plants we eat. The next 17 years, as he persuaded his math career, Lolazi scoured the scientific literature for any studies, data he could find. The results, as he collected them, all seemed to point in the same direction. The junk food effect he had learned about that Arizona lab also appeared to be occurring in fields and forests around the world. Every leaf and grass blade on Earth makes more and more sugars as CO2 levels keep rising. We are witnessing the greatest injection of carbohydrates into the biosphere in human history, and an injection that dilutes other nutrients in our food supply. You all should think about that for a little bit. Does any of his things sound familiar to you? Okay, so he published those findings just a few years ago, adding to the concerns of a small but increasingly worried group of researchers who are raising unsettled questions about the future of our food supply. Carbon dioxide have an effect on human health we haven't accounted for yet? The answer appears to be yes. Along the way, it steered Lolazi and other scientists directly into some thorniest questions in their profession, including not just how hard it is to do research in a field that doesn't quite yet exist. Now, this is a very fairly long article, okay? I am not going to read it to you. I want you to read it yourself, okay? It's in Political, The Great Nutrient Collapse. All you gotta do is type, search up Google, The Great Nutrient Collapse. You'll see the information there. It's a really, really very good article. It covers a variety of studies that they've done. Here in agricultural research, for example, it's understood some time that many of our most important foods have been getting less nutritious. I've been talking about that forever, and I know exactly why it's getting less nutritious. They haven't figured it out yet, but I have. Measurements of fruits and vegetables show that their minerals, vitamins, and protein content has measurably dropped over the past 50 to 70 years. Yes, it has. Researchers have generally assumed the reason is fairly straightforward. We've been breeding and choosing crops for higher yield rather than nutrition, and higher yielding crops, whether broccoli, tomatoes, or tend to be less nutrition packed, which is not exactly true. This is true if you're dealing with chemicals. Totally untrue if you're doing it organically. As a matter of fact, the word organic farming in this whole article doesn't even appear at once. Okay. So in 2004, excuse me, I have to calm myself. In 2004, a landmark study of fruits and vegetables found that everything from protein to calcium, iron, and vitamin C had declined significantly across most garden crops since 1950. The researchers concluded this could be mostly be explained by the varieties we were choosing to grow. Again, did the researchers study organic gardening along with conventional gardening? No, they just studied everything, right? I don't even think that they studied any organic. They must have been some organic studies in there, but I'm betting, you know, look, the way it works in the research field and thus in business, right? You're doing a research, you get money to do the research. That's all I'm going to say. You're not going to find, I tell people, you look what you find, okay? You find what you look for. Find what you look for. What I mean to say is, find what you look for, right? So if they're doing a study here and they're getting paid by fertilizer companies, they're going to come up and say, well, everything's, you know, getting diluted, it's significantly declining. It has to do with the varieties they're choosing to grow, right? But it's not true. They're basically, right now, for example, there are lots of research I talked to you all, probably 6 months to a year ago on a research that was done by Purdue. It's a, you know, very important tool, but they found that there's no difference between organically grown produce and conventionally grown produce in terms of nutrition and minerals. They found there was no difference. You read the study, you find that the study is all about studies that did studies that did other studies. Nowhere in there was anybody a qualified organic gardener. Nobody knew anything about organic gardening at all. They didn't study an organic gardening farm as opposed to a conventional farm. So it's the same thing that's going on here. So the scientists, let me go through a little bit of this because I got plenty of time to go over this one particular thing. So Lolassi and a handful of other scientists have come to suspect that that's not the whole story, and that the atmosphere itself may be changing the food we eat. Now, they're sort of on the track because the atmosphere is, there's a law of cause and effect. What's interesting about the law of cause and effect, right? Let me explain to you. And this is going to probably, I'm going to be extending it on to the next. One of the things I've learned from experience is that when I'm teaching something, there's nothing like real life going on right now to teach us something, right? Okay, so here's the law of cause and effect. Okay, did you know that it's law of cause and effect and effect and effect and effect and effect and effect and effect? That the effect before it is the cause, effect that follows. Does that make sense? There's an initial cause that started it, like the Big Bang, right? That's the initial cause, right? That's the initial cause. After that, there's an effect from that cause. Then there's also another effect, other effects from that effect. Turn other effects from that effect. So it's very easy to confuse the previous effect and call that a cause. You know what I'm saying, right? So let me just give you an example with this. That. This is such an amazing song. It has that dual holograms, which you listen to it while you're walking with it, which I have done. It's just absolutely amazing how it interacts with the environment. Okay, anyway, so this study here is about scientists are saying that the atmosphere may be changing the food we eat. Yes, it is, because that is one of the causes, right? That's a cause, that's an effect. Okay, I can tell you what the cause is, but let me just go through the whole thing. Okay, so plants need carbon dioxide to live like humans need oxygen. And in the increasing polarized debate about climate science, one thing is enough for the debate is that the level of CO2 in the atmosphere is rising. Far so good. Before the Industrial Revolution, the Earth's atmosphere had about 280 parts per million of carbon dioxide. Last year, the planet crossed over 400 parts per million threshold. Scientists predict we will likely reach 550 parts per million within the next half century, essentially twice the amount that was in the air when Americans first started farming with tractors. So far so good, right? So if you're someone who thinks about plant growth, this seems like a good thing, right? It also been useful ammunition for politicians looking for reasons to worry about less about the implications of climate change. Representative Lamar Smith, a Republican who chairs the House of Committee on Science, recently argued that people shouldn't be worried about rising CO2 levels because it's good for plants. And what's good for plants, it's good for us. And I get that a lot. But that's assuming, right, that the CO2 is all that it needs. And a higher concentration of carbon dioxide in our atmosphere would aid photosynthesis, which in turn contributes to increasing plant growth, the Republican wrote. This correlates to a greater volume of food production and better quality food. It doesn't. Nope, it doesn't. It can, but it doesn't if it's done the way it's done now. I'll explain to you as we go. But as the zooplankton experiment showed, greater volumes and better qualities might not go hand in hand. Can, but you have to know what you're doing, okay? You can't just do it the way we're doing it now and expect the same results, okay? In fact, they might be adversely linked. And they are. If you don't know what you're doing, you're going to make a big mess of it. Trust me, it's already a big mess. As the best scientists can tell, this is what happens. Rising CO2 revs up photosynthesis, a process that helps plants transform from sunlight to food. This makes plant grow, but also leads them to pack in more carbohydrates, like glucose, at the expense of other nutrients that we depend on, like protein, iron, zinc, in other words, trace minerals as well. 2002, while a postdoctoral fellow at the University, Lolazzi, I'm sorry, Mr. Lolazzi, if I get your name wrong, Lolazzi, published a seminal research paper in Trends, Ecology and Evolution, a leading journal, arguing that rising CO2 in human nutrition were inexplicably linked to a global shift in the quality of plants. In the paper, Lolazzi complained about the dearth of data. Among thousands of publications he had reviewed on plants and rising CO2, found only one thing that looked specifically at how it affected the balance of nutrient price, crop that billions of people rely on. The paper was published in 1997. Lolazzi's paper was first to tie the impact of CO2 on plant quality to nutrition. But he also raised more questions than he answered, arguing there were fundamental holes in their research. These nutritional shifts were happening up and down the food chain. The phenomena need to be measured and understood. Part of the problem Lolazzi was finding lay in the research world itself. Still is. Answering the question required an understanding of plant psychology, agriculture, and nutrition. You have to also be a soil doctor, as well as a healthy dollop of math. So I'm assuming the agricultural part should be soil, right? Okay. He could do the math, but he was also excuse me, a young academic trying to establish himself, and math departments weren't especially interested in solving problems in farming and human health. Lades struggled to get funding and generate new data and continued to obsessively collect published data from researchers across the globe. It's a long thing about his about what he's been trying to do, how he's been trying to get information together, you know. And it was very difficult for him because it's just like for most people, like myself, this is a subject that people are just so off the wall that they don't even know what they're really talking about. But so it came down to the fact that it says here that we know that what a major shift in carbohydrate ratio in a diet is ultimately to what degree would a shift in the food system contribute that. It has to do with nutrition and the food we eat. And a person, Marian Nesto, a nutrition philosophy professor at New York University, was asked to comment on the story. And he's one of the best-known nutrition experts in the country. He initially expressed skepticism about the whole concept, but offered to dig into it about climate issues. After reviewing the evidence, she changed her tune. "I'm convinced," she said, in a small email which was also urging caution. "I wasn't clear whether CO2-driven nutrition depletion could have a meaningful impact on public health. Need to know a whole lot more. Of course, will have an impact." But, so it's a long, they go into CO2, okay, and how CO2 can affect plants. And all of it is true how that, they don't quite correlate something. They talk about C3. C3 is a type of plants approximately 95% of the plants of species are this C3 type, like wheat, rice, barley, potatoes. They know that elevated CO2 levels drives down mineral levels. Uncorrelated bullshit. I'll tell you about it in a second. So they understand that CO2 has this effect, but they don't know exactly how that process comes about. They also did a wide variety of one scientist talked with the article was very interesting, covered bees, right? And so he did a strain of research on CO2 and about plants and bees. And so he devised an experiment. Including in plant breeding, he decided to look at bee food. And so goldenrod is a wildflower many consider a weed, but it's important to bees. Flowers late in the season, pollen's important to bees. So they've been studying this sample. There's this institute, the Smithsonian Institute happens to have hundreds of samples of goldenrod dating back to 1842. So he used that information to look at the protein levels of the goldenrod, and then they found that goldenrod pollen levels dropped by a third since the Industrial Revolution. It also tracks with the rise in CO2. So you would say, well, Industrial Revolution, CO2 rise, that must be the pollution that the Industrial Revolution CO2. Yeah, that's what's on the obvious. Remember the law of cause and effect. These are effects. Okay. The scientist worries that we're not studying all the ways CO2 affects plants that we depend on for food. True, they're not studying all the truth, but they're really not. They also need to study is how, what is it, what the, well, you know what I always talk about, right? The soil. Did they say anything about the soil so far? So far we're on the CO2, right? Okay. So basically, a long story here because he keeps on going about CO2, lots about CO2 questions, how CO2 affects water, how the climate rising, how the CO2 nutrition dynamic affects the human being, because we eat so much on your rice and so, you know. But it doesn't really cover, again, lots and lots of information here about CO2, what it means for a human, for our food intake, and they're absolutely right, except for the most important thing, and that's where I come in right now, and that's what I'm going to tell you. Mic levels are low compared to the music. It's hard to say, oh, can I get my mic level up? You know what I'm saying? But I'll get the mic level up higher. How's that? Mic level is now up. The audio is barely light. No? Better. Okay. That's my brain talking here. I have to get the mic levels up a little higher. Okay. So let me explain to you what I see going on. Yes, it's tied into the Industrial Revolution. They need to. I'm sure they realize that the industrial. What did the Industrial Revolution bring to the world? Okay, what was it that the Industrial Revolution brought to the world? Let me think. What was the main thing that was brought to the world? Chemical fertilizers. Okay, chemical fertilizers. That's when they started making fertilizers. That's what brought on the Industrial Revolution. Not only because, you know, fertilizers is used for lots of other things, from gunpowder to whatever. But what's the point here, right? Where does the fertilizer go? Into the soil. So what happened in the Industrial Revolution that started changing things? We started dumping toxins into the soil. We've been systemically killing, damaging the soil since the Industrial Revolution. And I have been systemically telling you the relationship between the health of the soil and our nutrition. Not only nutrition and the food we eat, because he mentioned a little bit about the forest, but the health of the trees and the plants that are growing everywhere. And you understand what the relationship between pests and diseases and the lack of minerals. Figure it out, right? You see the connection? So the CO2 is a process because is an effect. The Industrial Revolution brought about more equipment, machinery, right? Those things. It also brought about more farming, which then means they started rototilling the soil more, damaging the soil more. All of these things slowly but surely. When you do the soil and you damage the trees like that, you're releasing carbon dioxide. When you do industry, you're generating carbon dioxide. Either way, you're producing more and more carbon dioxide to the air. But the real problem is the damage it's doing to the soil. Get it? See, the real problem is the damage it's doing to the soil. Nowadays, you know, with the climate change being right up there, there's one scientist that said, "Give me $300 billion, and we can control the climate change by doing basic farming practices in the soil." Helping the soil. It doesn't say help the soil come back, but he wants to farm it, produce more products that grow, which in turn will, you know, offset the carbon dioxide. He's on the sort of the right path, but what he's really saying is we need to bring the soil back to life. The relationship between the health of the soil, which when I say the health of the soil, it's like talking about the health of the body. So there's organs and all kinds of things in that body, right? It's a living organism, the body. Me, Andy Lopez's body is me, right? Okay. So when I say the soil, the health of the soil, living soil, I consider it the body. When I talk about the earth, I don't talk about this little patch here. I talk about the earth. The whole earth is one body. whether we take care of the water, right? Whether we take care of the air, whether we take care of the soil, right? It's just like in our body. Whether we take care of our skin, where we take care of our poop, our pee, where we take care of our food, how we take, how we eliminate, how we ingest, all the different things are all part of this body. And this body has a consciousness, by the way, right? And it isn't too weird to say, well, the earth has a body, and why doesn't it have a consciousness too? And it does. Trust me, it does. But not the same as, you know, one of the things that's interesting about consciousness is that they're all, everything's connected to the same conscious. So I could take you down another path and explain to you a little more about the whole thing. But right now I want to talk to you about the soil. What's really going on is the health of the soil. We have been systemically damaging, destroying the soil for a few hundred years now. It hasn't taken us that long, really. Thousands and thousands of years that the Americans Indians have been here. Not one single damage has been happening to the soil. And I want to explain to you more about the correlation. Okay, so the Industrial Revolution, right? Okay, so that's damaging the soil. At the same time, while we were damaging the soil, we were killing everything, and we still are. We've killed billions and billions and billions of birds and animals throughout the year. We're eliminating, causing extinction of all these animals. What is it that these animals do to the in relationship to the soil? So on one hand, we're dumping chemicals into the soil. On the other hand, we're killing the animals that normally would die and poop and put the essentials back into the soil. So we're disrupted the ability of animals. When was the last time an animal came and died in your backyard and disintegrated and returned to the earth? At one time, we had the sky full of birds and creatures, and they all pooped, you know. And we're all returned to the earth, and that's why when I talk about making compost, you're not making, you know, people don't understand the real reason why you make compost. And that's going to be one of my tests. You know why we make compost. We make compost to help the earth come back to life, to put that process back in again. We realize that we have been killing so many animals left and right that the animals are no longer able to do the things they're supposed to do, which is poop and die and return to the earth. They take stuff, they eat it, and when they give it back to the earth, it's in a format that the earth can take the bacteria and microbes are there, replenishes the microbe life. Where do you think the trace minerals come from? You think that magically they appear out of nowhere? No. Everything is interconnected. Everything is interconnected. The trace minerals in the ocean, where do you think they come from? From the soil. It's called rain. Rain, everything gets recycled all throughout the earth. That's one of the problems the earth is having now, because toxins are also recycled. Plastic is also going out, spreading out all over. There's no place you can't find plastic or toxic now, pretty much on the planet. So on one level, you see, we don't have the animals anymore that are doing their thing, that they go from one part of the United States to another part of the United States, right? That's what they did. They would travel, and there's still a lot of them trying to do that. It's very difficult going across the roads or going across cities and going across, not getting killed by planes and so forth. So that, and now we want to put up a wall, right? What does that wall do down there in Texas? Further stops the animal from migrating from one place to the other like the way they normally do. After a while, you won't have any animals whatsoever. But we're really saying you're not going to have any soil that functions, that's alive, see? So the trace minerals, right, are a fundamental basics of health. You need to have all the trace minerals in order to be healthy. You're not going to get to trace minerals by growing in trace mineral deficient dead soil. No matter how much chemical fertilizer you use, no matter how nice that crop looks, because the crop will grow. You know, the whatever you're growing, the broccoli, the cabbage, the corn will grow. The soil could be totally dead. You know, you can grow it without soil. You can grow it in hydroponics, right? You can even grow it in the air. You can have it rotating. So as the roots come by, you spray it with the nutrients. If you did those, that's another issue I could talk to you about, because you still got to provide the trace minerals. But if you go the chemical route and provide, and thinking that the trace minerals are the same thing, if you don't produce chemically and they produce organically, think again. It's like us eating rock dust. We're not very good at that. You have to have something else eat it before we eat it. Something else has to eat that. It has to go through this whole process before we get to it. It's the same thing with trees, right? And we're not connecting. We're not connecting. And it's really interesting. I should say that we're not connected. I really should say we're not connected. I'm hoping my voice is still good, because I don't hear a thing. Normally I have my headphone on. I can hear my voice because I love hearing my voice. Let me do this. Okay, so the article, and I am trying to get a hold of the authors, the scientists. I've been trying to figure out how best to communicate with them. I already sent them emails, and basically saying, look, you know, okay, so we know the CO2 is rising, and we know something's affecting the plants, and you think it's the CO2 that's affecting the plants. The reality, that's not it. That's not what's affecting the plant. Look at what they're growing in. Look at what they're growing in the soil. It's not the CO2 that's affecting the soil. It's what the toxins we are doing is affecting the soils. It's the toxins we have been doing, the things we've been doing that's affecting the soil. From cutting down the forest and raising cattle, even though you would say, gee, cow pooped, and that poop should be very good. But there's a difference between having 100 head of cattle and having 1 million head of cattle. All of a sudden, you have a trillion tons of poop, and you don't even know how to do with it. Deal with it. There isn't a year going by that I don't see some E. coli case going on, you know, outbreak somewhere. And that's because we have so much poop, we don't know what to do with it. And really, there is a very simple solution to that poop, but you don't seem to get that in your head. Maybe you're not making money off of that poop, but you turn it into compost. And it's not the same thing as sewer sludge. Normally, the poop that humans eat should be good, but not if what you get, what you put out, is the same thing with humans. You eat junk, junk is going to come out. If you eat toxins is going to come out. If you're trace mineral deficient, food is already, you're not, your poop is not going to be coming out trace mineral rich, right? You're not going to magically get the minerals in your body. It doesn't work there. Your body takes the minerals out. So if you're not getting the minerals, you ain't going to poop any minerals out. Your body's going to just say, I need these minerals. Hello, testing, right? Testing, hello, where is it? So there's also correlation between growing, you know, agriculture and human health. Duh. Now they're saying, well, you know, if we don't eat good food, we're going to be unhealthy. Now you're saying that. Look at all the food people are eating. I'm just getting over, I'm still going through dental surgery, right? Have the top teeth done, now they're going to do the bottom teeth. But when they do surgery, they make sure you take these antibiotics. It's like setting up an atomic bomb in your stomach. You get rid of every microbe in there. And your stomach's going, what the heck happened here? Point is that my body is not getting the nutrients it needs, not getting trace minerals. It's not able to absorb the minerals that it needs to process. It's taking me a while to recover. Now I got to do it again for the lower part. But when you go out and buy food, you're supposed to be in your food. I mean, I really miss having a garden, because one of the things I do, I would go out there, sit there and watch the plants grow and then eat it. And I would get the nutrients. I tell people that a long time ago when I was in Puerto Rico, my great-grandmother told me to, I picked a carrot and I went and washed it and eating it. And she says, She took it, put it right back in the ground again, dug it in there, took it out, made me eat it with soil. And she says, you need some of that in your body too. And she was exactly right. And I can go into the details about, you know, the mycorrhiza being the oldest living being on the planet, and how we have evolved from that. How one day we decided, well, we're going to be able to get up and walk around instead of just having roots. We decided we're going to be mobile. But that's what our stomach is. Our stomach basically is, I like to say in Star Trek, bags of water. But basically, our stomach is our moving soil that we move with us. And we take the system that we evolved that is in the soil. That's how everything breaks down. That's how we get our food. That's how everything breaks down for us, and that's how we get. But it's no coincidence that the 90 trace minerals that tree needs, that the soil produces, is the same 90 trace minerals that we need. That's not a coincidence. So the study is somebody needs to get to them and say, look, okay, you got to start looking at the cause. Okay, the real cause is humans doing the Industrial Revolution, thinking they know best, going down the path of money rather than the path of what's best for everything, going down the path of destruction. That's what we're doing now. You know, we're destroying more and more and more. This whole climate change thing is a natural progression. You can see where the direction is we're going into. And only an idiot would stick their hand in the sand with their butt in the air and not expect any problems. And that's what's going on now. I should write that down already. Maybe I will. Okay, maybe not. I told myself I wasn't going to start calling people idiots, but I'm going to write it down here. Human beings are idiots. idiots. and that's exactly what's going on now. Okay, so we need to look at the damage that we were doing to the soil. How does that correlate to the CO2? Because if you know, and that's the obvious. To me, it's obvious. You know, I tell people, look, okay, so we have CO2 rising. Okay, so let's just put cars aside. Let's just put, industry aside, planes, you know, all those things that produce CO2, and they only add up to maybe 40%, maybe 40%. Gee, where is the other 60% of the CO2 level rising come from? Okay. So let's just look at trees, okay? Trees taking CO2 give off oxygen. We've been cutting them down, okay? Let's look at the ocean. The ocean takes in CO2, and we've been destroying that through pollution, right? Okay. And what about let's see? There's one more thing that I miss here. We got the trees. We got the ocean. Ah, the soil. The soil takes carbon dioxide too, but we've been destroying that. You know what happens when you turn over the soil? You're releasing the carbon dioxide into the air. You know what happens when you damage the ocean so to the point where it can't handle CO2? It gets released in the air. You know what happens if you don't have any trees cutting down CO2? You get more CO2. That's where the other 60% comes from. And don't be surprised if the soil right there holds 40% of it. The soil is the key to it. The trees grow in the soil. The ocean is nourished by the soil. The minerals come from the soil. Goes up in you know. Somebody's calling me with a question?
Hello, Andy.
Oh, God. I have to rest. I'm in shock. Maybe I have to rest. Hello?
Hi, Andy. This is Erica from Santa Barbara.
Hi, Erica from Santa Barbara.
Hello. Nice to talk with
you.
You
listen
great
to
program.
My show? What did you say?
I'm getting back into it. You helped me years ago when I cut back my ficus benjamina way too far.
I remember it was dead for some reason.
Yeah. I thought it was dead, and you told me it would come back, and sure enough, it's full as ever, and it came back.
Cool. I hope you're feeding it to take care of it.
I am. Yeah. It loves me again. So that's good.
So what's up?
I've got a question. I've got a front yard full of Italian stone pines. Now, they were the little Christmas trees sold in January that were half dead in the supermarket. So I bought a few of them. I planted them in my front yard. And that was probably 15 years ago.
Well, you have some nice looking pines. Are they okay?
Oh, yeah, they're beautiful. But they're big. And I realize that they're the parasol tree. And they really have that umbrella effect. Yeah. And I think I planted them way too close together. And I'm wondering, what should I do now? You know, they're kind of impeding each other the natural way that they're supposed to grow. Except the two on either ends.
Well,
so what do you recommend?
What are you doing to take care of? I mean, how they're doing well, so you're feeding them okay and watering them right and all that stuff?
Oh, yeah, they're beautiful. They're very lush. They're very thick.
Well, here's the thing. What I would
do nothing.
If it ain't broken, don't fix it. I wouldn't worry about it unless you can see signs of a struggle. Because they could be just friendly with each other, hugging and holding hands. They could be fine. What I would look at is their interaction between the two of the branches that they have there, you know, and see if there's anything going on there. Normally, that shouldn't be a problem. But what you may want to do is maybe once every few years, do a light thinning, prune on any dead stuff. You have to be very. It's better to under prune than to over prune. You know, it's better not to prune at all unless you absolutely have to, unless you know what you're doing. Because if you prune wrong, you can set yourself up for a variety of other problems. So I would wait until you think that there's something wrong. Do they look fine?
Oh yeah, they're very lush, but you know some of the branches are turning crooked because it senses something's right there on either side
right.
of it.
Right, so those, if you have lots and lots of branches, you can talk it over with the tree and say, look, I'm just going to give you a light haircut. That's all you need. So some of these light branches can go, lighten it up a little bit, nothing heavy. But you have to know the person is pruning, so they have to make sure that their tools are clean. They have to know what they're doing. If they go and butcher it, it's very bad. So I would offhand, if you can't find anybody, just relax. And leave them alone. Otherwise, because you could do more damage. Some guy can go there and do the wrong thing, and then you go, oh boy, right?
Right. Huh. And they're, you know, I realize they grow so tall, correct?
They will. Yeah, they will. They will go. They will get to be really big. If they're doing,
will they
you know,
lift
if you're
my
taking
house?
Care of, if you're taking care of them, they're doing fine. I would start looking for somebody that's highly recommended, that's very, very light. On the pruning, that you want them to just lightly thin it out, get rid of any dead branches, look for any signs of a disease. But normally, I would just leave them alone. If they're doing good, leave them alone, right?
Mm-hmm. And then
you just keep an eye open for it, because nowadays with the fire and all this stuff, it really won't hurt to keep them on the lightly pruned. You know what I mean?
Are they deep rooted?
Yes, they will be. And this is not the time of year to do it. You need to wait until February or March. You only have a small window once a year that you can prune them.
Really?
Right. The rest of the time they will bleed on you all the time, and they'll be open to some type of bug or disease attacking it.
Oh wow!
Right.
Okay. You know, I also have a canary pine.
Huh?
And I love those. Somebody told me it was a canary pine. I didn't realize that, but just growing straight up and looking very healthy.
It looks good too, right? It's doing well.
Yeah, they're wonderful.
Are you? What? You're not feeding them anything, I take it then?
I don't. I just have mulch around them. There's no lawn, just mulch, and they're looking great. Yeah.
What I would do is to avoid any problems is. Give them some rock dust several times a year. And rock dust is real easy to find. They come in pelletized form. You only need a small amount of it because then it gets its trace minerals that it needs. You don't want to wait until it has that problem. I've learned from experience. Start feeding them. Be very careful how you feed them. You know, the rock dust is a very simple process. It's just that rock dust. It's pelletized. You can't. But it will give them the trace minerals. If you look on the website, you see I have a rock dust blend. So I get rock dust in a variety. I get 14 different types of rock dust, and I get trace minerals and blend them together. And I mean microbes and blend them together. And then you give that to the plant a little bit on a regular basis. It will do wonders rather than waiting for it to have a problem, because the heat and everything that's going on with all the fires can really stress out and damage the soil. Are you using compost?
No, I just had chipped tree bark that
you
I just put in my front yard.
Source of compost, okay?
Okay.
Just look at it this way. The universe has sent you and your plants to me, and you're saying, what should I do? And I'm telling you what you should do to avoid a problem. So right now what's happening is that the weather's getting a little weird, right? Getting really hot and fires and all that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you need to start paying more attention to the to putting natural microbes back into the soil rather than waiting when they're gone. Because the fact that the trees are doing good, that means the soil is still fairly alive. Now's a good time to keep it that way rather than wait for it. All of a sudden you find out that the water is going down the hill, it isn't going to the plant anymore. Next thing you know, you have a problem and you can't bring the soil back.
Hmm. Makes sense.
Right?
Well, terrific. Well, thank you. Thank you for your program, and it was great to reconnect. It's been a few years.
Did you manage to go on the website and sign up?
Yes.
Well, cool. Then you should. Did you get the sign up for the podcast? That way you should get it in your iPhone or whatever you use.
Yes. Yes. I'm listening to you on my phone right now.
You should also get my new book by now, because you'll get that as an ebook version automatically. Did you manage to get it, the PDF file version of it?
I might have. I had to check my. I just signed up just before I got tuned into your program.
Yeah, you should be able to get the PDF version of it. But also too, just so you know, you also entered in this month's contest, so you could be the winner of the printed version of it, which you get the color version and the print and the black. See, I got two versions of the book, the black and white version and the color version. You got my earlier book, didn't you? Right.
Very nice. Yes. Mm-hmm.
You'll like this one, though. So you automatically get entered. So what I do is I'll take your let's see. So since you registered, I'll have you up there. I'll put you in a file. So at the end of the beginning of next month, I'll announce who gets the winner. They get the color version, which is $100. It sells for $100, and the black and white version. And I suggest you use the black and white version, right, and put the color version away in a glass jar, big glass container, so people can look at it but don't touch it. No, it's a beautiful version of color. Thank you for calling, okay?
Thank you for all your help. Bye-bye.
Thank you. So like I said, people are eventually come around, because I at one time I had like over 20,000 members. That I started in 1970. And every time I move to a different radio station, I tend to lose a whole bunch of them. And every time I set up a new website, you know, you got to start all over again. But sooner or later, they come around. So so you can see that what I have been talking about is the health of the soil. Now, they don't talk very much about the word organic gardening does not appear in here. They're basically saying our food is becoming less and less nutritious. Yeah, if you're doing it this way, if you just try to grow in this dead soil and you have chemical fertilizers, which makes the plants look like they're real plants. That's why the bees are dying. They don't get the trace minerals. You all need the trace minerals. And that's what happens with carbohydrates and protein, right? That's what's going on with me, too. I'm having almost the same identical problem in that I can't get the trace minerals into my body because I can't eat properly because I'm having dental work. And so I'm lacking in the protein and all the stuff I need, and my body's going for sugar, right? Carbohydrates, hey, give me. No. So it's the same problem. So we need to, this study needs to look at how that process in the soil gets to, how the food from the soil, the nutrition, the minerals in the soil gets to the plants. And what I'm saying is take one step further. Look at the trees. If they're sick, it's because the soil is not functioning right. Yeah, the carbon dioxide is affecting the trees in lots of different ways, from the heat, from the fires, right, from the winds, lack of water, changing the climate. All that affects the soil, affects the health of the soil. And if it destroys, you destroy the health of the soil, the whole soil will not function. It's not functioning. Like this lady, okay, so she had, their trees are doing well. That means the soil is still alive there. She's using mulch and covering. But if she was to wait until the soil is dead, because you have to understand that, you know, the forest and places like that, things are constantly dying and being used as a source, getting replenished. The soil is constantly being replenished. It isn't if you live in your backyard. I don't know what type of environment this lady has. You know, if she has how much property, where she has animals. I doubt if she has deers and stuff like that running through the backyard. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. know, that's one reason why animals are so good, but less and less and less of them out there to replenish the soil. So that's what we have to do. That's why I told her to apply the rock dust and the compost now. Don't wait until the soil's dead to apply it. That's the problem many people are having. They say organic doesn't work. Organic fertilizers don't work. Well, gee whiz, I wonder why. Because organic fertilizers need the microbes for it to work. The better organic fertilizers on the market are providing some microbes with it. But you can't just take the organic fertilizer and the microbes in and dump it into the ground and expect the microbes to go to work. The microbes have to build an environmental environment that works for them so they can function that way. That's what the compost comes in. That's why the application of compost is so important. And it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen overnight. You know, a lot of places, one of the biggest, I guess not the biggest, the biggest problem, biggest question my new customers have is how come it costs so much? I love to do it. I'd be happy to do a show on why my services cost what they cost. But the thing is that they say, well, can't you just come once, do your thing, and it's done. It's like me going to a doctor, and the doctor says, you have to take these pills for whatever. And I said, why can't I just take one pill and the problem's solved? You know? So it takes a long time to bring the soil back because it's a slow process. Okay? It's a slow process of bringing the pH level of the soil to the right place, building up the humus, building up the condominiums that they all live in, their little buildings and the houses they're building, building the infrastructure that connects them between the minerals, between the microbes and the plants, building the root hairs that's supposed to be on the roots, making that connection again, setting up the whole process so that the soil is functioning. The soil takes so. I tell people, look, whatever rock dust and minerals you give it now, the tree is not going to get it until next year if it's functioning. Even then, it's over a period of time where it gets it. So that's it. That's the gift of it in the sense that the great nutrient collapse is the soil. Okay, so maybe I should call it the great soil collapse. There you go. Great soil collapse. And that's going to be the name of my next column, the great soil collapse. Because that's what we're doing. We have systemically been destroying the soil. By destroying the soil, we have been systemically destroying the microorganisms that live in there that function. That is the key we need to get into. And it's important because it affects us directly. We, you know, it doesn't. The study doesn't say anything about farming organically. The key to organic farming, right? The whole basis of organic farming is healthy living soil. You know, and of course it has adverse effects. The fires and the climate change will affect an organic farm just as much as affects an inorganic, a conventional farm. But something tells me that organic farm would do much better. Because a farmer would be setting up to protect the soil, not some idiot who turns over the soil over on a regular basis and expects to be getting anything out of it. Sorry, I didn't mean to call farmers. we got another minute. I think we got a minute. I don't know. I heard something like that. I think my knee is talking to me. Anyway, listen, we'll be back next week. Next week, I'm going to talk to you about bricks and nutrient. And I'm still going to continue with a great nutrient collapse. Or as we'd like to say in the business, the great soil collapse. Remember, send me your questions to Andy Lopez at InvisibleGardener.com. And feel free to call me when you're on the air, even if it's on a different subject. Remember, membership is free. Visit InvisibleGardener.com today. Everybody gets all my books. Since membership is free, there's 21 ebooks up there for you to get. It's all totally free. You can just download it, read it, ask questions. That's what I'm here for. So coming up is the Cosmic Spaceship with your host, the captain. That would be me. I'll see you next week. Make sure that you sign up for my newsletter. You should be getting my podcast. I don't know what's going on. I think the computer is talking to me. Oh, dear. Yes.